Thank you for listening to this podcast brought to you by the Center for Christian Music Studies at Baylor University. This podcast was recorded at the 2013 Alleluia Conference. For more information about Alleluia, visit us online at www.baylor.edu/alleluia.
Going from what's mine to what's yours. It is an interesting subject because more and more as time goes on, I've discovered that people who suffer the loss of power that comes many times from stepping aside or retirement or the natural flow of things or even just turning some of their responsibilities over to somebody else. For some folks, for some personality types, that is a huge, huge deal. And the sense of loss that comes with that is very, very significant for some folks. So let's talk about this. What's mine, what's yours, and going into legacy. Now this again from your manual that told you what this course was about, this 1 hour. When we follow the call of God to minister, it's easy for us to slide into the trap of feeling not only empowered, but also entitled. Ministers in general, not is general, ministers in general, and musicians in particular, can become some of the most territorial creatures on the planet. In our quest to protect what is good, we often overprotect from what might be even better. In this session, we'll discuss how to give our best effort to our vocations and then to discover the joy and freedom of placing the legacy in the hands of others and then graciously letting go. Now, I think I have heard the story that some of us in this room have already set some retirement dates.
May 30th, 2017.
Wow. What do you think about that?
You're asking me the question.
Yeah.
I've always found it. I enjoy releasing things to other people. It's nice to let other people have a chance to do it. In fact, somehow that's inspiring. When you see, you put the idea out there, you kind of started the fuse, but then they carried it on, and what they did was far beyond what my little mind was ever conceiving of. So it's like I agree, but I'm enjoying the joy of looking forward to, in fact, we were talking at lunch, a new staff member's coming on, and I'm looking forward to passing the baton of the junior high choir, you know, to someone completely new, you know, that's exciting to me to look forward to that. Because to me, that gives, it gives a future and a hope that's going to go beyond May 30th, 2017. So.
Now, let me ask your colleagues, do you think this is a typical response? Do you think this is, there's no right or wrong answer here, but is his response or his attitude about this typical?
I don't think so. Not of a music minister.
What would you describe as more typical?
What you talk about is territorial. And I think a lot of musicians are perfectionists, and And I think that a lot of times we want things done a certain way, and we feel like the only way that's going to get done is if I step aside, I'll just do it. And so I think a lot of times we feel like what we have created or what we have empowered is not going to continue on if we're not in charge of it all. The older I get, the less I feel that they're there.
You know,
I think early in career, 20, 30 years ago.
Somebody else. What is the more typical thing that you have seen? What have you seen when people retire? Have you seen smooth transitions?
I've seen some fighting to hold on, and it's that maybe it's the influence or that sense. I don't think it's real, but it's that sense of maybe power that they've lost, and it's like trying to hold sand. Randy, we was talking about this. I've got a retired university choral director that's a part of the sings in the choir in Abilene, and he had some opportunities to go and do some other things, but when he got back home, the very first thing I did, I sat down with him and said, I can't imagine a life that all you've known is directing choirs, university kids, you know, students and youth choirs for all these many years, and the lives you've been able to touch, and you've gone from doing that full time, all the time, very full schedule, to nothing. To not even having an ensemble to direct at all. And so I said, here, sanctuary choir list, pick your ensemble and get it going. Because I can't even put my mind where you are right now, to not have a place. And for him it wasn't so much about power and influence, but his strength is so much in relationship that not having his work really took him a very long way away from where he was. And I've really sought to be very intentional about maintaining his connectedness. And there have been opportunities that he's had to do that himself. But I've worked hard to be his advocate.
Yeah.
In that area, Randy. And I hope maybe
that strikes me
that
as
somebody
being,
can do that.
Strikes me as being a very kind and compassionate and ministerial thing that you have done there. That seems really wonderful. We're not really talking about retiring here. We're talking about the ability that we have. I mean, we are talking about retiring, because that's what I asked you about. But we're talking about our ability before we retire to let go and to pass some batons, maybe not all batons, but some batons to some other people and to let them function. And what I have seen, what you described that you did, is a perfect example of that, of your being able to relinquish something over to somebody else who can do a good job with this. Might not do it the way you do it, but he'll do a good job, you know. And I think it's about our being willing to relinquish some of our whatever it is. I don't know that any of us are into power that much, but are just the opportunity that we have.
And Randy, I served some overseas as a missionary, and we were always taught and encouraged to build our ministries in such a way that we were always working ourselves out of a job, and that's what it was all about. You know, we provided the leadership, and it's very gratifying to look down the road, things, seeds that I planted, you know, and now over 10 years ago, and those things are still thriving.
Yeah.
And you know, it never was about me as an individual, but and I try to carry that in my ministry as well. I mean, obviously there's some things that I have to do at this point, but you know, I can see like what Randy was sharing, as he is looking forward, you know, that we have an opportunity to pass a portion of his ministry to someone else that can kind of make it their own and build on the foundation that Randy's done. And that's what it's all about.
All you have to see, and I hear I'm kind of pushing towards retirement again, but it's to make a point for backing up. All you have to see is about one really bad example of a person who retires but doesn't let go to realize how damaging that is to a church, and the split loyalties and the kinds of things that take place there. I think the real difficult thing is, to use your situation, is if the person who came in didn't want to do a junior high choir and just saw Tallywood Players as nonsense. That would be hard. That would really be hard, because you poured your life into these things. Well, I think that...
But what you just said is very insightful. Part of the reason is, if you ever see it done poorly, then you want to do it better.
Yeah.
And we've Carl Smith, who I'm talking about, we've seen it done poorly. And so you go like, wow, I don't ever want that.
To happen again.
Yeah. It being critical, nothing ever can measure up to what they did. It's always being critical of everyone else. And that's to me, that's so confining. You know, you want to celebrate that it goes on. That it's right. Like the river was going by. Our pastor says this all the time, but you know, I stepped into the river a long time ago, and it had been going long before I got there. Mm-hmm. And 50 years from now, mm-hmm. hopefully, it's still going to be home after I stepped out. Mm-hmm. But it's the river still. It's about the river. It's not about me.
Yeah. Okay. This has been good discussion. Let's look at flashpoints of passion for just a minute. I think all of us can look back to when in our ministries began to take shape, way back there somewhere, little flashes of passion that began to put together this constellation called our ministry today. I want to give you a couple of flashpoints for me, just to stimulate some of your own. I think it's very important for us to get back in touch with those flashpoints for a couple of reasons, because it re-inspires us, and secondly, because it helps us to create some flashpoints for those younger than we are, who are going to need those flashpoints to develop their own sense of direction and ministry.
Really?
Everybody knows. Amazing, isn't it?
It can happen there.
It must have been a God thing.
Flashpoint in Beaumont. I really put that at the drive between Houston and Beaumont takes about 3 days. But it's only, you know, 90 miles or something, you know, but it, there is nothing there. It is the most boring drive you've ever seen. Most of you know my brother, and he's been here this week. He was about 20 years old, and he was doing a youth choir in Kerrville, Texas, at First Baptist Church in the 60s. I was in a little town out away from that town, out of town, in the sticks, and he knew where I was growing up because he had grown up there. And he knew that I didn't have that many people around me during the summertime, kids. It was a very small place. And he had this great youth choir of about 65 students. They were high schoolers. They sang really well, or it sure seemed like they did in the late 60s. And I was about 14 years old, and the big brother invited me to go with that group on a blue school bus and be a part of that group and go to Beaumont, Texas for a long weekend tour. I don't know how he got me into there without getting himself in trouble with the other kids. I mean, this kid hadn't practiced, you know. He doesn't know any of the music. He hasn't done the time, you know. I don't know how he worked that out, but he did. And I made that trip. Huge flashpoint for that 14-year-old. I mean, I was in this choir singing with, there were almost as many boys as girls in the group, and they had four parts. And we sang. I can still remember some of that music. We played cards going down, played hearts and spades and other things on the trip. I made some of the most wonderful friendships that weekend. Huge road trip for this 14-year-old. And I just, at that point, it began to catch up to me and catch on. I had such a great time with that. I want to be able to provide something like this experience for a lot of other kids when I get older. Beaumont. A few years later, he produced a musical Mark did called I Wonder. It was about an atheist person who was convinced to trust Jesus and to become a Christian. And there was it was a musical score and libretto and all of that. And he did it with the same group of kids, and he did it with full orchestra. And I just thought, man, this is the greatest musical thing I've ever heard. It probably wasn't the greatest musical thing, but to me and my 16-year-old ears, it was amazing. And I said to myself, I got to do something like that. You know? Flashpoint. I wonder. Then, about that period of time, there was a young pastor that came to our little bitty church who was 26 years old, and he just made friends with everybody. He was just a friend to everybody. He was the most wonderful mentor, and he was closer to us than any student minister would probably ever be, but he was the pastor of the church. And he just built relationships with us, and he was wonderful. Then it came time for me to go away to college, and I got to meet the likes of some people that you may not even know of. A band director named Greg Berry. A choral director named O.J. Bryson. Another choral director named R. Paul Green. And these dynamic leaders, I can see their conducting in everything that I do, all three of those people. And then later on, my seminary conducting teacher, Robert Burton, And it's interesting how those dynamic leaders came at a place and they mentored me in such a way that that was a flashpoint. It was a flashpoint, and I wanted to do that and be that for somebody else along the way. Know where Alvin, Texas is?
Mm-hmm.
Some of you do. Noah and Ryan, the pitchers from there. I spent 4 years there. I started there as a student minister of music for the summer. Music and youth. It's just a little summer job. But I fell in love with the place, and they liked my work okay. So I moved, and I moved to Houston Baptist University, and I spent 4 years in Alvin, Texas. And it was life-changing. So by the time I was 23 years old, I already had four years of full-time music minister experience. And it was just, that whole experience was wonderful. And how I got there was that same pastor who had mentored me in high school was at this church and brought me aboard. He was a missionary too. He had been a missionary to Ivory Coast. When I went to seminary, I had been doing church music for a long time, full time, even though I was a student. And it was tough. It was a tough road. And I know my brother and some other people encouraged me. When you're at seminary, don't do the full-time church routine. You've done that. Take the time to put on a choir robe and go to a larger church and sing in somebody's choir. And just observe. Just sing and be a part of it. Have fun. So I ended up at University Baptist in Fort Worth. Wasn't there very long before Bob Hatfield, who was there at the time, made the connection, and he put me in charge of the middle school choir. First rehearsal, I discovered, he said, "Now, this is a big group. There's about 70 of them. And you also need to know," or I don't think he told me, but I found out in my first rehearsal, that there were three sets of twin boys in that group.
Oh boy.
So not only did you have competition between the twins, but you had them between each other in the, you know, so you've got, you know, what an experience. What an incredible experience. And then I went to First Baptist San Antonio, spent 9 years there, then First Baptist Shreveport, and then I ended up in San Antonio back again, and you know, and started YouthQ, and now we're doing this new website, and it's kind of a flashpoint too. But it's really interesting how every one of those places were guiding my calling into more specificity as time went on. And with each one of those new assignments, the passion began to grow to provide some of what I had gathered as a student and as an adolescent for other students and adolescents who were going to need flashpoints of their own and who would need some adult help in setting those flashpoints. So I'll bet you that if you look back on your own life, you will see those flashpoints. Some of them come through a great deal of pain. Some of them are pure blessings, just pure and simple. But some of them come as God works His way into our lives through the pain along the way. We've got a little minute. Would you like to share one of your flashpoints? Flashpoints of passion from way back, or maybe last week, or when you were 12, or at some point? I think it'll do us good to get in touch with those, because it will help us to ignite that passion again. One of the things that we've said in Youth Cube for years is, please, if you're working with students, and even if you're not, if you're just bumping up against students, don't forget what it's like and what it feels like to be 14. Don't ever lose that completely. You've got to remember the nerdishness of that and the awkwardness of that. And it will be better ministers if we will remember.